For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hey everyone, it's Jeannie Alexander, and you're listening to this Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, hosted by my good friends, Dee and Jason.
All right, Dee, we've been doing this podcast now for over 5 years. This is our sixth year.
Yes.
And I think it's time that we have a podcast makeover, okay?
Okay.
And so here's what I'm suggesting. Yes. I think you should go real dark with like purple highlights, and I go the blonde with kind of the red highlights, and you be the dark one, and I be the light one. And since I'm the big one, I'm going to hide behind you the whole time.
I got a corset you can use.
Up and together.
Just remember that when you show the cleavage, not only do the guys in the Porsches see it, but the guys with one tooth driving the bus also
see it.
Yeah. It's kind of like a grenade. You're going to hit anybody who's around.
Right.
Welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, everybody. We are happy to be back. We've updated a little bit. We got our background back here. Jason has done an incredible job putting these albums up here on our wall, and these are real legitimate, like, LP albums, vinyl. In there, all of them, right? We've got vinyl in just about every single thing here,
Every single one of them, yeah.
Many of them gifts from our dear friend Chris Weber.
Chris Weber's given me a lot of those, yeah.
Yeah, super fan, love him. And if you want to have a little fun in this episode, you can kind of gaze behind us because we're not that interesting, but see how many of these albums you can guess.
Yeah.
A couple of them are pretty obvious and some of them are less obvious. And I can see one that I will be referencing. One, at least, album that I will be referencing today.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I can see it from here. So I'm excited to talk about it.
What are we talking about today?
Okay, so we are talking about a band and an album. The band is world famous and has been for 50 years.
Sure.
They've had top 200 albums in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and the 2010s. So 4 decades, and you've got a top 200 album in every single one of those decades. That's pretty good. But we're going to talk today about the album that is their biggest success, but that they completely disregard now.
I know. It really breaks my heart. We need to dive into this whole story, but it
hurts
me to hear that story.
So this story, that idea of, you know, like we're disregarding this album that really brought us our most commercial success, it's one thing, but it reminds me of a story that I heard, okay? So in the 90s, Layne Staley, the lead singer for Alice in Chains, is hanging out over at Ann Wilson's house. And she's swimming at the pool, and he's sitting poolside having a beer. I mean, she was friends with those guys.
It's cool.
And he's sitting there, and this is a couple years before his, you know, ultimate overdose. And a meteor goes by in the sky, and it's so bright, and it's not even nighttime. It's daytime, but this meteor goes by. It's so bright that it lights his face up. And she's swimming in the pool, and she sees it, and he sees it. And he's like, "Did you see that?" He said, "You just don't like that. You don't see things like that. Do you know how lucky we are? How lucky we are to have been here in this moment and had this star shooting experience." And what it makes me think of is they did this at least 4 or 5 times. They had that experience in the record industry. And the biggest, brightest shooting star that they had, they don't like.
That's
a little weird.
I see where you're going with that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little weird.
That's interesting. And of course, Layne Staley talking about how lucky he is at anything is a little bit.
Yes. Well, and apparently Apparently, Jerry Cantrell crawled into bed with Ann Wilson at some point. I don't know that. I don't think anything was ever consummated there. And I think that Mike Starr, before his ultimate demise, raided her closet for some of her cool 80s get-ups.
I've got a story on their sort of their rock clothes.
Right. Well, when in one of these parties, I say that they've kind of distanced themselves from this album. But at one of the parties in the 90s that you got the grunge kids around, and they're like, you know, I liked Barracuda and like Crazy on You. And those were cool songs. Your 80s stuff sucked. And she's like, hey, if you don't like the house that the 80s stuff bought, you can get the f*** out.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, because
I'm glad that she defended it, though.
Yeah. I mean, she's not defending the music per se, but she has to. I mean, you can't not admit that this is the album that made them ultra wealthy.
Ultra wealthy. And I will say this, the 80s stuff does not suck. This album is great.
Yeah. No,
it's a lot of fun.
If it had been an album written by other people, which this is, and then time goes by and you look back and you go, geez, that was just a terrible experience. You know, right. It was popular for a minute, but that's just not good stuff. That's one thing. But these are timeless hits.
Oh yeah. They play them on the radio all the time.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, you just mentioned it.
Yeah.
They kind of disregard this album. They don't play the songs very much in concert, and kind of has a sourpuss attitude about these particular songs, mainly because they didn't write them. They saw themselves as songwriters. But this, you know, this was their comeback album, and they were rescued, like Capitol rescued them. And they said, listen, you've had two albums, Private Audition and Passion Works, which didn't even certify. They didn't even make gold.
Yes, they only sold 400,000 copies. I mean, how sad.
Right. But Capitol came in and said, listen, we want to do this with you. I think that they can give a lot of credit to the Footloose soundtrack, because Ann Wilson and Mike Reno had one massive hit from the Footloose soundtrack. Oh, how could I have known that all my life I only needed you?
There we go. That's not the album I was going to mention. Keep going.
Right. Reached number 7 on the charts, mm-hmm. and they said, you know what? This girl is super talented. This band is super talented. We can do something. They just got to have better songs.
Yeah, well, the A&R guy that had picked them up was the same guy who had done a resurgent thing for Tina Turner and for Joe Cocker and several other of those 70s acts that he was trying to bring back into the mainstream again. And he had obviously done it pretty successfully with those two. And so why not? I mean, why not trust the guy to bring these girls back?
Absolutely. And this is the same formula, the same science experiment, if you will. It worked for Kiss. It worked for Aerosmith.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked like gangbusters for Heart.
Yeah. We want to bring in some songwriters who know how to write hits. Sorry that you're not writing your own stuff, but that's part of the deal.
We offer you $1 bazillion in mega hits, or you can be left on the dust pile of history.
Right. Unsigned.
Okay.
Okay. Before we dive in track by track for the Heart album, we need to give a shout out to our executive producers.
Yes.
We have had a slew in this last week. We have had Lynette Harris.
Yes.
Thank you, Lynette.
Thanks, Lynette.
We've had Richard Buck.
Thank you, Richard. Appreciate you guys. Yeah.
We have my dear friend, Gautier Pirozac, who has joined the Patreon family finally.
Thank you, Gautier.
Gautier goes on long drives. He has to drive like through Texas for his job, and he says, that's my time. I just binge listen to all of your episodes over that time. So we won't talk about the show, and then all of a sudden we'll have 18 episodes to talk about. We also have Dominic Terabassi. Thank you very much, Dominic. We appreciate your contribution.
Thanks, Dominic.
To us. Guys, if you want to become Patreon members, you can join the member page for free. If you want to have a paid membership, that will get you access to all of our one-hit wonder episodes, which are fantastic, and we have some novelty songs like Mariah Carey and the Christmas song and Kokomo that you did with Deaf Dave.
That's right.
But we've kind of developed a new formula for this where one of us will pick a song and the other one has to try to guess what it is. And it's a great audience participation. We got a sample of it a couple of episodes ago if you want to go check that one out. I think the title of the episode is basically, Can You Guess This Song Before Jason Does?
Yes, we do that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, guys, please go check out our Patreon page. We would love it if you would financially support us for as little as a cup of coffee for one of us every other month. You know,
maybe we'll go to the movies by ourselves. We do appreciate you guys so much, though. It's very, very nice. Yes.
Thank you, guys. All right. So you have some statistics for us, some chart information.
I've got a few tidbits for you on the overview, just the album itself.
Yeah.
It's a little tricky to reference this album because it is the self-titled album Heart from 1985.
Right.
Okay. And when they asked Ann Wilson, why did you name it Heart? Like, why did you just self-title it? She's like, well, I'm trying not to put my sourpuss spin on this, but basically, well, we didn't write the songs, so we didn't feel the closeness with the album to name it anything enough that it would be real.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, go try harder. Try harder. Okay. I have a suggestion.
Yeah.
How about These Dreams?
These Dreams.
Or Looks That Kill.
Yeah.
Something. Shell Shock. Not just, we couldn't think of anything. We don't like it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Could call it Cleavage and you'd even sold more copies.
Right. You can call it Nancy's Legs. Yeah. This won a Grammy for Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group. 5 times platinum. Ron Nevison, who is the producer of this album, said this is his most successful album he ever produced.
Yep.
Okay. Now, he was the sound engineer on Physical Graffiti for Led Zeppelin, which we think got him this job because the Wilson girls are big Led Zeppelin fans.
Right.
Right. But he produced Jefferson Starship, Kiss, Chicago, Europe, Survivor.
He had just come off of Vital Signs when he started to do this album.
That's right.
And we were talking earlier. I'm looking at Vital Signs. I don't know how none of those songs made it into our top 5 of 1985. Go check that episode out. And we only had one from Chicago 17. We got to match up. Those are two perfect albums to match up. Vital Signs by Survivor, Chicago 17 by Chicago.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
It's done then.
Done. Let it be said, let it be so. All right.
So let it be written, so let it be done.
Yes. But did I say that he did Damn Yankees album?
No.
I love the Damn Yankees album.
You have a, they're like your ugly girlfriend in the back that you just love, even though she's ugly.
Not that cute, but sure fun to hang out with, right? But he also did Lynyrd Skynyrd, Meatloaf, Firehouse. So this guy's done a lot of stuff. Bad Company was a sound engineer for them.
Yeah.
The Who. So he got the job. After meeting the girls,
he
met them in Las Cruces when they were rehearsing.
Yeah, screwing around.
Yeah.
Like 5 years before they ever made this album.
Yep. Yeah. This album was released June 21st, 1985.
And you thought I wasn't paying attention.
I'm glad you said that. It reached number one December 21st, 1985.
There you go.
Do you know what it knocked out of the number one spot?
85.
Late 85.
Late 85. I'm
covered by the Shirley Can't Be Serious podcast.
Gonna guess it's Purple Rain.
It's the Miami Vice soundtrack.
Oh, right.
Knocked the Miami Vice soundtrack out of the number one spot, and then for one glorious week, and then Miami Vice came in and said, get out of our spot.
Took back over. Yep.
I will tell you this, the Miami Vice soundtrack knocked out Brothers in Arms by Dire Straits, which had a 9-week run at number one.
That, by the way, we didn't mention it. That's the album that we're comparing this album to. We are doing Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms versus 1985 Heart. And so, yeah, at the end of these two episodes, we'll give our opinion on which of these two albums is the one we're going to pick up as we're walking out the door.
It's going to be fun.
It is.
Okay. All right, I'm ready to dive into songs.
Let's go.
First song out of the gate is called If Looks Could Kill.
I'm getting this feeling like I've seen a lady taking off her clothes in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie to this song. Did that happen? Did I make that up?
I don't know that. I don't remember that specific scene.
Strip club scene from Raw Deal.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Raw Deal, produced by Dino De Laurentiis and Arnold Schwarzenegger in 1986.
Yep.
That version of the song was a dance song.
Yeah, it's kind of a disco-y style version, yeah.
We got to listen to that right here.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me say this.
Yeah.
I heard this intro guitar in this piece, and I was like, heck yeah, you're starting it off right. And
rocking it, yeah.
They are doing a great, I mean, much better than the introduction to that other song. And really getting it. But then I started listening to the words, and I'm like, this isn't doing it for me. I know that a lot of people love this one. This was the last single off of the album.
This single.
And it didn't do as well, obviously, as the other ones, but it didn't do nothing either. But it's my least favorite song on the album.
What?
Yes.
Are you crazy?
I am not. This is not my
I love this song. I think it's fantastic. In fact, I got this album for Christmas in 1985.
Okay.
I was at my grandmother's house, had the cassette tape, and I go scour my grandmother's house for a tape deck.
Yeah.
Well, grandmas don't have tape decks.
Not back then, no.
Well, she had a little radio, like a tune-in radio on our kitchen counter.
Lots of grandmas with tape decks right now.
True. True. But there was a place for a cassette where you insert it. It was like a VCR tape, like you didn't kick anything out and slide it in. You just went.
Okay.
And I remember I heard this song first because you couldn't fast forward anything on grandma's tape deck.
Definitely not, right.
And the first song out of the gate, I was like, this song kicks butt. I love it.
Yeah. I love the guitar intro. I thought it's a great intro song for the album. It's just that this is an album. I've said it. This is an album full of potential number one singles.
Ooh, okay.
Like the whole album, any one of these songs they could have released and had a smash hit, and they did with several of them, right?
Yeah.
So when I say it's least on the list for me, that's not necessarily that big of an insult.
Okay.
Okay. It's still a great intro song. It's just I don't feel like the words are great for me for this song. And it's obviously, it's a cover of somebody else's song that had already been released and that had already been, you know, picked up for the Raw Deal movie.
That won't be the first time that's happened.
So they had this song, Capitol Records has this song, and they're looking to give it to Tina Turner.
Tina Turner.
And Ron Nevinson is, the producer, is like, excuse me, that's not a Tina Turner song. That's an Ann Wilson song.
We take this little dancey pop thing, we rock it up, and we give the Ann Wilson attitude to it. Looks could kill, you'd be lying on the floor.
Yeah.
I think he loves
the lyrics. I must be in the minority here because he loves the lyrics, but not the best one on the album for me.
So this was the comeback album for the Wilson sisters, right? And they had to agree on three things. Look, you guys got to mutually agree on a producer, okay? And Ann Wilson said, we wanted a producer with a vision for where we're going. And Ron Nevison had that. So that check one. The girls had to agree on all the songs. And number three, they had to be open to songs written by other people.
That last one's a little fuzzy.
Yeah. Here's the interesting thing I think on that.
Uh-huh.
Is, you know how it goes. We're like, listen, girls, you guys got to be open to other songs written by other people in case we need them.
Uh-huh.
Down the road, it's like, well, you guys wrote three or four songs for this album. We're not releasing any of them.
Right. Zero.
Yeah. Although I think one could have been a hit.
Yeah.
At least one could have been a major hit. And we'll talk about that here.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll have to share that with me.
Okay.
Okay. We ready to go to song number two?
Song number two.
Oh, my goodness. Here it comes.
Tease the hair. Tease the bangs. I've been lonely. I've been waiting for you. I'm pretending. And that's all I can do.
I don't think you could give me a better example of 1985 synthesizer-infused, heavy, hard, guitar-rocking, beautiful power ballad than this.
You've been hiding, never letting it show.
I love it, right? I mean, this just sounds like Aquanet, right? This is the song that started the comeback trail. I might make a case that Almost Paradise started it, but this is the one for Heart.
What about love? Don't you want someone to care about you? What about love? Don't let it slip away.
Yeah.
Right? This song was originally written and recorded by a Canadian rock band called Toronto. Big fan of Toronto?
I don't know them.
Exactly.
Right.
Right?
Swung and a miss for them.
Well, so here's the deal. It was written by Sharon Allen and Brian Allen. That's a married couple. They were in the band Toronto together.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote this song, wanted to release it as a single, and the rest of the band said, nah, not any good. Now, you know who else co-wrote this song with them? Jim Vallance.
Oh, Jim Vallance, who collaborated with Brian Adams all
Brian
the time.
Brian Adams.
Up there. Okay, there's up there. That's the second album, though.
Jim Vallance also played drums on that track.
Okay.
We got to listen to that song real quick.
Okay. So you have a far too quiet backing vocal in an exchange back and forth with the "What About Love" instead of having the lead singer fully sing it, and that's
the difference,
that's
right?
That's the fail right there. Yeah,
that's what Ron Nevison came in and he said, "Here's an undiscovered, uncut diamond.
Yep,
let's polish it up and let Ann Wilson give her big voice for the chorus."
There's nothing wrong with that song, right, as it was by Toronto, except for that chorus like you're talking about. And I told you, it's like I'm listening to Berlin. You know, this is I could be watching Tom Cruise making out with Kelly McGillis,
right,
on this
right.
deal, right?
I could see it, sure.
But obviously, Ann Wilson has arguably the best female rock voice in history. She's in the conversation, right?
I am not disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
She's got a kick you in the nuts, punch you in the face, rock voice.
Yeah.
And this is what this song needed.
You're right. And if there's an opportunity to sing, let's let Ann do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. No, we don't need the backing vocals to give us part of this chorus that's amazing. No.
Speaking of backing vocals,
yeah,
you know who sang background vocals on this song?
I do.
Yeah?
I do.
Hey, give it to me.
Okay. You got the Starship flying in here.
Yes.
Because you don't have just one member of Starship, but two. You've got Grace Slick, yeah, and Mickey Thomas.
Yes.
Mickey Thomas himself.
That's right. So when Ron Nevison brought this to the Wilson sisters, mm-hmm, they didn't like it because they thought the demo sounded wimpy.
Yeah.
And instead of saying, yeah, but I can rock that up,
right,
take charge of this thing,
yeah,
right, he said, let's see how much power we can add to it. Let's heart it up. Right?
I mean, say what you will about Starship. They can provide some powerful backing vocals, those
two. Sure. It's great, right?
Yeah.
This song actually led to the breakup of Toronto. Because they wanted to release it. They didn't. Oh, screw you guys. And that's when Toronto died. By the way, this song reached number 10 in 1985.
Okay.
Do you want to know the 10?
Yay!
Yay, all right.
All right, I'm excited. Yes.
So number 10 is What About Love. Number 9 is Every Time You Go Away.
That almost made my top 5 of 1985 list, by
great
the way.
Song. Yeah. Great song. Number 8, If You Love Somebody, Set Them Free by Sting.
Yep.
Go back to our Police episode. Number 7, Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams.
Sure.
Number 6, We Don't Need Another Hero by Tina Turner. We just talked about her.
Yep.
Number 5, Freeway of Love by Aretha Franklin.
Okay, yeah.
Which I brought her up to you yesterday. We might mention her in a second.
Yeah.
Number 4, St. Elmo's Fire by John Parr.
Which,
covered.
Go check our Patreon page, boys and girls.
Right. Number 3, Never Surrender by Corey Hart.
That was, yes, I remember
number
that.
Number 2, Shout by Tears for Fears.
Covered that one as well.
Number 1, Power of Love by Huey Lewis in the News.
Da, 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 da. Okay, and as long as we're talking two songs on the top 10. I'll bring it up now.
Yeah.
Do you know who also played on these songs? Guy named Johnny Cola.
Yeah.
You might recognize him as the saxophone player for this little band right over here.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Huey Lewis screams his name in the heart of rock and roll.
Yep.
Johnny!
You got it.
Yeah. Okay. I got to talk about the video for just a second. Okay.
Yeah.
Video was shot in London. Of course, this is after their makeover. The girls, Anne's gone really dark with the purple highlights. Nancy's gone
platinum blonde.
Platinum blonde with red highlights. Boobs up and together for everyone, right? Corsets.
The way I like them. It's the way everybody back in the 1980s liked them.
Okay. This music video was directed by David Mallet. Okay. It's the same guy who did Call Me, White Wedding, Photographed by Def Leppard, Rock of Ages, Crimson and Clover by Joan Jett, Radio Gaga, Rock You Like a Hurricane, Tears Are Falling, and Thunderstruck. This guy's, you know, done a lot.
Yeah. Okay?
According to Ann Wilson, Mallet wanted to transform them into porn kittens.
Kinda.
Maybe he did. It also sold a crap ton of records.
It did. Yes.
And the last thing on this song, Anne said she sang this song angry.
Yeah.
It was like a accusation to this guy. Yeah. Well, yeah? What about love?
Right.
Don't you want somebody to care about you?
Yeah. Right?
Instead of the wimpy version that we get from Toronto.
Yeah.
Okay. Next song on the album is a song called Never.
I freaking love it. Like, it's just, it's funky and gets a dance beat to it. You got the woohoos and the ahas at the beginning. I mean, just, there's nothing but good about this song.
This is the one that convinced me that I needed this tape for Christmas 1985.
Yeah.
It's just a great song. This reached number 4 on the charts. This is a huge song for them.
Yeah.
This is lighting the fire on the comeback. They're killing it straight off the bat. This song was co-written by Holly Knight and a guy named Gene Black, okay?
Yeah.
I heard Ron Nevison talk about this. He's like, one of the ways that you can introduce new songs to a band is you can say, hey, girls, why don't you write some songs with Holly Knight? Makes it easier for them to swallow this idea that they're co-writing these songs with an established writer like Holly Knight. Okay?
Right. But by the way, for those who don't know Holly Knight, Obsession.
Obsession. Better Be Good to Me. Love is a Battlefield. Stick to Your Guns by Bon Jovi. Hide Your Heart by Kiss. The Warrior. Love Touch.
She is a well-known hit song writer. And, by the way, she also played the keyboards on this.
Did she?
Yeah, she played the keyboards on this album, yeah.
Okay, cool. Anne and Nancy would write this song with their best friend named Sue Ennis, okay?
Yeah.
And together, they had a pseudonym, Connie.
Okay.
So anytime you look at the credits, any song written by Connie?
Is Anne, Nancy, and?
Sue.
Sue.
Their friend Sue.
Okay. I don't know where you get Connie from all of that.
I don't either.
Sue actually went to high school with Anne.
Okay.
And high school was a hard time for Anne. Like, she is obviously an incredible singer and has incredible confidence, but high school was not a time that she had that.
Yeah.
And when she hit her teen years, she gained a bunch of weight and was ridiculed by her classmates. She'd actually grown up as a kid with a stutter because of insecurities that she had, and she said singing was the very first time I completed a sentence without stuttering.
Wow.
So it literally, the music literally saved her from her speech impediment. And so when she was young, she got mono and was out of school for 3 months.
Yes.
And so to help her from going stir crazy, her parents bought her a guitar.
Yes.
And she only had a kind of passing interest in it, but she had a little sister, just 4 years younger, who was hanging around, and the sister treated the guitar like her new best friend.
Yes.
Played it over and over, slept with it, and she and Anne, who would eventually also play guitar again, would just sit and listen to music and play songs together. They grew up from very, very young doing this together, and they're still doing it together now, years later.
I did hear that the family nicknamed Nancy Whizfingers.
She was good. She's really, really good.
By the way, you've got a little nugget for us on who Nancy was dating at the time this record was recorded.
I don't know where she was in the dating process, but I heard them talking about their first airplane ride.
Okay.
And there's a moment in this movie called Almost Famous where they're on an airplane, and it's like it starts to have the bad things happen. It looks like the airplane's going to go down, and everybody just starts confessing all their... Well, Almost Famous was written by a guy named Cameron Crowe.
Right.
That scene is based upon the heart experience in their own airplane about almost dying, not just once, but a couple of different times, in the Bermuda Triangle, no less. And the reason that Cameron Crowe is familiar with that story is because he ended up marrying Nancy Wilson. I had no idea that they were married.
Cameron Crowe, who?
He's the Rolling Stone guy who wrote Almost Famous. He wrote Jerry Maguire. You got something else?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
Say Anything.
Oh, yeah. And Nancy, of course, you mentioned this to me, has a like cameo moment in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
She is, quote unquote, the beautiful girl in the car. She also does the closing credits song for Say Anything, which I'm getting ready to join Dayton Johnson to discuss Say Anything.
Oh, yeah. Go check out the Docking Bay 77 podcast and get Dayton Johnson's view on the Say Anything movie with Jason.
Yeah, I can't wait. This song never reached number four. Let me back up. Number seven is Election Day by Arcadia. Does that ring a bell to you?
Does, because we have a town nearby named Arcadia where you can go to Pops, the famous buy any flavor of pop you want,
like,
at that place.
Ham sandwich flavored pop or whatever.
Literally had a spaghetti flavored pop at my house.
Disgusting.
It is.
Okay. Election Day by Arcadia, yeah, was what happened when Duran Duran split up. One group went and became the Power Station. Arcadia became the other one. They had, right, a top 10 hit. Number six is You Belong to the City by Glenn Frey off the Miami Vice soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Number five is Say You, Say Me by Lionel Richie.
Love it.
Covered by Surely Can't Be Serious. Number four is Never. Number three, over there. Number three is We Built This City by Starship, mm-hmm, which I think we're going to talk about here in a second.
Maybe.
Number two, Separate Lives, Phil Collins. Talk about him in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And number one, Broken Wings by Mr. Mister. Oh, yeah. Check out our best of 1985.
Yep. It's okay on there.
All right. Now then, I've got a nugget for you. I'm dying to tell you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited.
Okay. The Never video was directed by Marty Kollner.
Okay, yeah, and we've talked Marty Kollner numerous times. He's directed a ton of videos. He's responsible for the HBO theme music. He was their director for a while and came up with the show idea for Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks. He's responsible for Hard Knocks.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He's also responsible for Tawny Katane on top of a Jaguar doing cartwheels.
Two Jaguars. One was Marty's. One was David Coverdale's.
That's it.
Yes.
Okay. He's also responsible for Alicia Silverstone and all the Aerosmith videos.
Yep.
Go back to our Get a Grip episode.
That's old.
Yep. Cher did If I Could Turn Back Time and a little skimpy thing on the Navy ship. Mm-hmm. He's responsible for that.
Yeah.
And We're Not Going to Take It by Twisted Sister, just to name a few.
No slacker.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's the funny quote on Marty Kollner.
All right.
He was the guy who pushed Nancy to the front and to the back.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of these things where we're going to show Nancy's body and Anne's face.
Right.
And that's
right,
what we're going to do, and that's how we're going to go forward. Okay.
Yep.
And this was his quote. He said, I was the one who pushed Nancy to the front because everybody told me how much they loved her tits.
Well, at least he didn't beat around the bush about it. I mean, not only did he do it, he did it in slow motion. I mean, whoosh.
Hey.
It was, that had to be a precursor to Baywatch.
Right? So this is the funny thing. They would actually stretch the video to make Anne look slimmer.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So Mick Kleber, who is an executive at Capitol, said he went to a meeting one day and he's like, guys, we're stretching the video to make her thin. He goes, let's just get her in the gym and get her in shape. Right? He right. goes, it's not, listen, this is a cost-effective way of making her slimmer, look better for videos. He's like, they wanted to burn me at the stake. They nearly threw me out of the meeting. They were insulted that I would say such things.
Right.
He goes, it's way cheaper, And instead, we're spending all this money. We're stretching the video. Right. By the way, this was the second single reached number 4 on the Billboard charts.
Yep.
Okay.
Incredible song. Love it.
Love it. It's a lot of fun. One more thing. I told you that their costumes, their kind of makeover, got it from 2 movies.
I guessed one of them.
You did guess one of them.
And that was Purple Rain.
Purple Rain. They took their cues from Prince.
Yeah.
And the other was Amadeus.
Well, similar style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Next song in the album?
Let's do it. Okay. I don't know if you've heard of this song before. This song's called These Dreams. Can you give me some crispy hi-hat and some big, warm synthesizers?
Yes.
And make me feel like it's 1985 again?
Couples, move out to the middle of the dance floor.
Gosh, what a beautiful song.
It's so good. Third single, released January of 86, reached number 1 in March of 1986. This song was written by Martin Page and Bernie Taupin.
Bernie Taupin, who, of course, normally collaborates with... So Elton John.
Elton John. Yeah. I mean, this is the guy who wrote all the hits for Elton John.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, Martin Page may not be as familiar to you.
Yeah.
But he wrote The King of Wishful Thinking,
sure,
which was a big pop song off of the Pretty Woman soundtrack.
Yep.
He also wrote a little song called We Built This City.
Starship rears their ugly head again.
Yes. Now, before I tell you the story on that, he also wrote a song called In the House of Stone and Light, which was a big hit in the 90s. It was kind of one of those.
Who did it?
Martin Page. And he was the singer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So here's the story. So Ron Nevison picks up a tape. It has 5 songs written by Martin Page and Bernie Taupin.
Okay.
He's like, oh, great. 5 songs written by these 2 talented songwriters? So he listens to him. He's like, okay, yeah, I like that one. Okay, that's all right. Okay. Oh, this song is called We Built This City. And he heard it, and he had just got done producing Starship's album. And he's like, I would never allow anybody I was producing to do this song. He said, you could hear its pop sensibilities. He goes, but it's a ridiculous song. And there's no way I would ever let my group do it.
Uh-huh.
Starship did it, and of course, erased all of the rock cred.
Yeah.
Right?
The poppiest of pop Starship songs ever, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And the other song was These Dreams. Which was actually originally called The Boys in the Mist. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
Right? Now, it was offered to Stevie Nicks, who turned it down. It was offered to Kim Carnes, who turned it down.
Mm.
It was offered to Don Henley, who turned it down.
Yeah.
But he grabbed it and said, hey, I think this would be a good song for Nancy. Okay?
For Nancy.
For Nancy Wilson. Okay. Yeah. So he always wanted to do one song with Nancy, and let's just give her a good one, let her do her thing. Okay? Yep. Now, I heard him tell the story. The urban legend here is that she had a cold when she recorded it. And so you can kind of hear her voice breaking when every second of the night, her voice kind of breaks.
Yeah.
And he said that urban legend is sort of true and sort of not true. He said, we always record a guiding vocal in order to record the drums and the guitar too.
Right.
When she recorded her guiding vocal, she had a cold. And so when she went to hit those notes, her voice broke a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then later when she did the actual final vocal, mm-hmm, it was missing that voice-breaking passion push. And so what he did is he went out and he clipped out that note and he inserted it. Like took this word and put it in place.
Right.
And I thought, that's genius, man.
That's fantastic.
Genius. When it's cold outside, every morning.
missing something. It's missing the imperfection. And that was, I enjoyed listening to, obviously we've listened to several interviews with them. One of them was with Nikki Six on his Sixth Sense podcast.
Oh, cool.
And the important feature was this concept of the mistakes make it yours.
Okay.
Like in today's music, all of the mistakes are edited out, right? They auto-tune the voices so that there's no sharp or flat to your voice.
Yeah.
Every voice is perfection. Well, that perfection takes away from the real, the raw of the song. And they said when they're playing on tour now, when they're doing concerts and stuff, people emote about things like when they make mistakes. Like every once in a while, you know, in a show you're like, okay, well, we effed that up. Let's start again.
Yeah,
and people love it. They'll go nuts because it's so real, and that's what's missing in so much of today's music. And people want it. People want to have that voice crack, or they want to have that slightly flat, slightly sharp moment in the song because that's what gives it its humanity.
When Nancy played the song for her mother, her mom's like, "Your voice is breaking. Shouldn't you re-record that?" And Ron was like, "Please, Mrs. Wilson, do not make me change this."
Ron, the huge music producer, was like, "Please,
right.
Please, Mrs. Wilson."
Ron Nevison said that when he played this song for the girls, Nancy was the one who fell in love with it right off the bat. And with her enthusiasm kind of behind it, Anne was on board.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually Anne is doing the backing vocals, which precede the lines in the song. It's kind of it's a reverse thing. It's kind of a dreamy thing, if you will.
Right.
Okay. Next song in the album is a song called The Wolf.
Let's rock out, shall we?
This is a rocking song.
So I told you, to me, this album is just full of songs that could all have been singles. I said I didn't. First song was my least favorite on the album. And then we've got a succession of songs that were chart-topping singles.
Yep.
And we got this one. I think it could absolutely have been a single. It's so strong with their Led Zeppelin influence, but it's got that 80s guitar, you know, heavier sound to it. And Anne is ripping into her hard rock, Robert Plant-style voice, freaking kicking butt. Amazing song. Love it.
It is a great song. This was written by the girls, along with Denny Carmassi and their friend Sue Ennis.
Yes.
Okay, so this is the first song written by them on this album. And I think you can make the case that this is as close as you're going to get to, like, Magic Man and Barracuda.
Okay. So it's interesting because in the 70s, and I got the list here, so I'll just say it. 1975, we have Magic Man.
Yeah.
Which was about Anne's husband, Michael Fisher, who was the brother of the lead guitarist, Roger Fisher. Crazy on You was 1976.
Yes.
And Barracuda was 1977. Yes, those are all rocking good songs. The way they put it, that when they're talking about this album, it's kind of like the difference between the mind-expanding drugs that were going on in the 70s and all the cocaine in the 80s.
Right.
And what we have with 1985 Heart is lots of cocaine.
Cocaine, maybe. Let's do it.
Yeah, lots of cocaine. Yeah.
In fact, I got a quote from Ann Wilson on the cocaine.
Yeah, go ahead.
She said, "If it weren't for cocaine, we wouldn't have done all the stuff that we did." In the 80s, we drank a lot of champagne,
yep,
did a lot of blow, and made a lot of videos.
Right. Well, the cocaine thing was real. And as you mentioned, we've got this big success in the 70s, right? They've got several hits year after year after year. And then they have a couple of bad showings, right? And probably in no small part due to some of the cocaine that they were doing at the time.
Sure.
You lose a little bit of the love and feel goodness when you're coked up all of the time, right? And so at the time they lost their record label in the early 80s, they got hit up by a coffee company to do a coffee commercial.
Oh, tell me the story.
So I sent you this video.
I love it.
I sent you the video of this coffee commercial, and I mean, they're one of many people that you're like, how are these people all together what? In this coffee commercial? But you've got David Bowie, you've got Kurt Vonnegut, you've got the football guy.
Kenny Anderson, the quarterback for the Bengals. What?
And the Wilson sisters recording, playing, and drinking some cup of Joe.
You know, because coffee, it helps everyone.
So you know why they did this commercial?
Why?
Because they got paid $1 million to do it. They didn't have any albums that were a success. What? And so, yeah. So they're just like, I got a cocaine habit to feed. I might as well endorse another product from Columbia.
Oh, my gosh. My money goes to Columbia, which comes back to me. Wow. That's funny.
Okay. So what do you think of this song?
I think it's a great song. It's a rocking song.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like a single to me. It's missing the synths that at this time we're putting these things over the top, but I think it's a rocker and I like it.
Yeah. I agree that it's definitely more on the rock side of things than the pop that these last several
right
singles have been. But gosh dang, I love it. I think it's great.
All right, hit stop on your tape player, kick it out, flip it over for side two. And we start off with a song called All Eyes.
Another rocker.
Dude, I think this is a great song. I think that this song belongs like on the Vision Quest soundtrack. Okay. Or Footloose, you know, something yeah. like that. It's upbeat. It's kind of poppy. It's kind of energetic.
So the beginning of it, that snare that's playing, it totally reminded me of John Cougar Mellencamp around the same time. And okay. they've got road stories with him as well. But then when it gets into the lyrics, it's less so him, but it's still a rocker. It's still strong. It's still fun. Again, I think easily could have been a single.
Easily could have been a single. Again, this song was written by Holly Knight, Gene Black, and Connie, the pseudonym.
Right.
Right. I like the line that says, when you look at me, it melts my legs. Ron Nevison said he agrees with you that this song could have been a single,
mm-hmm.
but in the process of polishing it, it just didn't quite get there.
Yeah. So this band,
yes.
Heart, it was a Seattle band.
Seattle, 1973 is when they started.
Yeah, except it was just a couple of guys starting a band who had already been doing bands together. They had done... it was Roger Fisher and Steve Fossen, and they had been in a band called The Army. They were in a band called Hocus Pocus, then turned into a band called White Heart, which is named after an Arthur C. Clarke story.
Okay.
It's Heart, H-A-R-T, though.
Okay.
And it was only after that that they had found themselves in need of a singer. This is about 1975, and somebody says, you guys should meet Anne. And Anne had left school, or had left her home and was playing in bars and stuff like that. Nancy was still too young. She's playing little acoustic sets on her own in coffee shops.
Okay.
And so they hook up with her, and immediately upon hearing her voice, they're like, oh, dang.
Greatest rock voice for a female of all time.
Right. Well, and then that's the interesting thing. We're talking about the mid-70s. This is 1975. How many female lead singers were there?
So you posed this question yesterday,
yeah.
and we started to look.
Like in all of rock music history, and obviously you've got girl groups, but how many of them were playing rock music in the 20 years that rock and roll had existed at that point?
So we came up with Janis Joplin.
Who was more blues. Like definitely. That was, yeah.
We came up with Linda Ronstadt.
Who was more country, southern.
Or California rock, right?
Yeah, California, yeah.
We came up with Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
She wasn't even the lead singer for Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, she was. I mean, obviously she had a lot of their hits, but the lead singing duties were rotating in that group for right. sure.
And then Pat Benatar.
But she didn't come around until later in the later. 70s.
That's it.
And so I think the case could be made. This is the first rock group with a female lead singer.
If you guys are out there and you know somebody we missed, we would love to hear what it is.
Right. I mean, obviously, certain groups exist. I mean, if you come to us with, you know, Missy and the Pussycats or whatever, I'm going to be like, who the crap was that? What? No.
Missy and the Pussycats.
Yeah.
That is the new rock band we need to hear from.
So by 75, they've got Ann Wilson. They've got Michael DeRosier, or DeRosier. I'm not really sure if he's French or not.
Okay.
He's on drums. Howard Lisi is playing guitar with them, and he's around for a while.
He does. He's
on
around.
This album, right?
He gets inducted in the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because of his involvement with Hart.
Yep. All these guys did.
Did they really?
2013, yeah. Wow, all the original founding members did.
Okay.
And then after the band's been together for a little while, Nancy joins the band, and they're like, ugh, another girl, but she's got some chops, and obviously she's beautiful too. So
hey, we'll take her.
Right. Now, they're playing some crappy gigs. They are paying their dues. And in 1975, they were in Vancouver because Anne's love interest, who had become her husband, was Roger Fisher's brother, Michael, who then became the manager of the band. He had moved to Canada to avoid the draft.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah, okay. He is a draft dodger, which is interesting because Anne and Nancy's dad was in the military.
He was a Marine, yeah.
But he flat out left the Marines, left after 20-something years of service because of Vietnam, because he was like, this is not a conflict we need to be involved in. And so they were worried about how he would react to Michael Fisher, and it actually turned, he actually said, you're brave for having the courage to stand up for what you believe and get out while you could, you know?
Interesting.
And we're talking about, like, people were raiding his house to come get him to be in the draft. Like, he had been drafted, and he walked out the back window as they came in.
Wow.
And went up to Canada.
Okay.
She falls in love with him. She writes the song Magic Man about him, their very first meeting. Yeah.
You don't understand, Mama. He's a magic man.
Got the magic hands. But he's managing the band. They're playing up in Canada. They all kind of make their way up to Canada so that he can manage the band. And in Canada, they play at a Vancouver high school in 1975, play the prom.
Yo, whoa.
Would you like to guess who was the class president of that high school in Vancouver, Canada in 1975?
If you tell me it's Bryan Adams, I'm going to die.
It's not Bryan Adams, but you think of one more famous Canadian that we've talked about on one of our first episodes, and you'll have it.
Oh, man. Michael J. Fox. Are you effing kidding me?
I am not kidding you. Michael J. Fox, class president of the 1975 Vancouver High School class, had Hart perform at the prom.
Wow, that is incredible.
I was hoping to blow your
mind
with that one.
What a nugget that is.
Yeah, is that freaking awesome or what?
I'm shell-shocked, if you will.
Way to bring it home. I like it.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, I thought that was absolutely great.
Oh, I'm stunned. That's incredible.
Right.
Love it. Okay.
So,
Moving on to the next song. Next song is called Nobody's Home.
Don't run too fast like a shot from a gun. Don't jump too high. Knock out the sun. Don't stray too far out on your own. When you finally come knocking, when you finally come knocking, there'll be nobody home.
So once again, I don't know how this isn't another Couples Move to the Dance Floor single that they seem to have done so well with on side one.
I totally agree with you. This could be a makeout classic from 1986.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Couples Move Out to the Dance Floor. This could have been a top 10 hit for Hart.
You throw it into a John Hughes high school movie and everybody's going to be clamoring for the single.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Anne's voice is really on display in this one. I mean, her voice is always out front, but it's soft. It's almost like a rock lullaby,
mm-hmm.
But it's just so beautiful. I love it. Makeout classic.
Absolutely. So speaking of making out, I mentioned in the last song that Nancy had joined the band. Well, eventually, you know, she starts making out with Roger Fisher. So you have Ann Wilson with Michael Fisher and Nancy Wilson with Michael's brother, Roger Fisher. And they got married, both couples. Yeah. So you got sisters married to brothers.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's not super weird, but it's a
novel idea.
It's a novel thing, yeah. But the problem was is that after some time of being married and being in a mega successful rock and roll band, Roger Fisher started doing drugs and other chicks.
Yes.
And so eventually Nancy found out about that. She's none too happy. He came home. Nobody's home.
Well done. Well done.
But they still had to perform on stage together, right? And so, you know, he freely admits, I regret the decision. I regret that I did that, all that stuff. But then she starts developing feelings for the drummer, Michael DeRozier.
There's no way this works out.
Yes, that would be the opposite of what happens. It is the opposite of working out. Yeah. So at some show, after many shows of her looking, you know, googly-eyed at the drummer, her ex being right there seeing it all happen, he's strung out on drugs, his guitar isn't working well that night, it's getting out of tune, and he melts down and has a guitar-smashing show. Not like Pete Townsend, but like in the middle of the set. Like this isn't the show end.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he freaking smashes it against the ground, throws it down, and walks off the stage. And the next day they said, Roger, we took a vote and you have been dismissed.
You're fired.
Yes.
Well, Ann is still married to his brother, who's the manager of the band.
Michael is still managing the band even after all of that. Yeah. And obviously, they stayed together for 10 years, but after 10 years, it became too hard for them as well.
Yes. So ultimately, the girls gained control of the band.
Yeah.
After they fired everybody.
Yeah. So in 82, you've lost the founding members, Roger Fisher and Steve Fossen. You've lost Michael DeRozier because he had the romance and then it was gone. And that's what happens.
See ya.
So,
yeah.
Bye.
Fall
obviously.
Out.
They're also doing coke and not having as much success with their albums. So basically, Howard Lessey is staying on. You have Ann and Nancy as the stay-through members of the band. And in 82, that's when they bring on Mark Andes to play the bass. He used to play with Canned Heat.
Okay.
And then you have the famous Denny Caramasi on drums. He played with Montrose and Sammy by himself.
Our buddy James Buckley is a big fan of Denny Caramasi.
Absolutely. And those are the guys playing on this album, of course.
Yeah.
So you have basically a five-member band with this one, but then you've got all of those extra backing people like Holly Knight, like Grace Slick and Johnny Cola and Mickey Thomas. You also have Frankie Sullivan from Survivor.
Yeah, he plays guitar on this song.
Exactly.
Because of Ron Nevison's involvement with Survivor from Vital Signs, an album that we hope to cover sometime this season.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Okay. I love this song, D. Would it shock you to say that this is one of my favorite songs on the album?
Not a bit. You love the slow dance songs. You love the makeout hits.
I do.
Yeah.
Okay, next song on the album?
Let's do it.
Next song on the album is a song called Nothing at All. Freaking love this one,
another
man.
Another smash, man. I mean, this is right up the Starship Alley of the day, right? Like, this is a very, has that style about it, but I freaking love it.
It's pop rock. It's light hits. It just is a feel-good, fun song with Ann's powerful voice.
Yeah.
Fantastic. This is the fourth single, released April of 1986. It reaches number 10 on the charts.
Okay.
Quick rundown real quick.
Yeah.
Of songs that we'll never, ever get to talk about again, probably. Number 9, Who's Johnny by El DeBarge from the movie
Short Circuit.
Short Circuit.
Yep.
Number 8, Holding Back the Years by Simply Red.
I love it.
Number 7, A Different Corner by George Michael. My exact reaction.
A Different Corner.
Yes.
I don't recognize this song.
I don't either.
At all.
I don't either.
This is from Wham 1986, The Edge of Heaven. I am dumbfounded that I have no memory of that song at all, and it was in the top 10.
I'm dumbfounded as well.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah.
Number six, No One Is to Blame, Howard Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, it's surrounded by songs we know well, right?
Very well, yeah.
Number five, I Can't Wait by New Shoes. I Can't Wait. Number four, Live to Tell by Madonna.
Number four, Madonna.
Live to Tell.
Uh-huh.
Number three, Crush on You by the Jets.
Yeah.
Number two, There'll Be Sad Songs by Billy Ocean.
Okay.
And then number one, On My Own by Michael McDonald and Patti LaBelle.
Go check out the Yacht Rock.
Okay.
The documentary.
All right. I got to drop this nugget on you. So on this album, Ron Nevison's going through his list of songs written by other people. Okay. He comes across this song. This song was actually written by a guy named Mark Mueller. Okay. Mark Mueller wrote a song called Crush by Jennifer Page, which was all over the radio in the late 90s. He wrote a song called That's What Love Is For by Amy Grant. He wrote the theme for the DuckTales TV show. Okay.
Right.
He wrote the theme for Chippendale Rescue Rangers. And he wrote the Babysitter Blues.
From Adventures in Babysitting.
That's
great.
And it's so hard. And it's so hard babysitting these guys.
Okay. Now here's the interesting thing about this. Other than Babysitter Blues, which is friggin' fantastic. Mm-hmm. Ron Nevison was going through his songs and he found this one and he was playing it with one of the record executives, a guy named Don. And Don's like, that one's going to be a hit. And Ron's like, really? I mean, do you really think so? And Don's like, trust me. And like, it was that connection of put this on the album. Gotta trust me.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, I trust you. And guess what? It was. The video for this is, I mean, they've got their hair teased all the way up. There's panthers walking around. Right. But you can clearly see, if you watch it critically, they're hiding Anne.
Oh, yeah.
I think she got a little extra.
She wasn't doing enough coke. Sorry.
They weren't stretching the video
enough.
Terrible
thing to say.
But they clearly moved Nancy very much to the front, mm-hmm. and to the back.
Yeah.
But the song's great.
Fantastic.
I love it.
So this is the second to last song on the album, What He Don't Know. Okay, what are your thoughts?
Well, according to Ron Nevison,
mm-hmm.
he said, what can I say? The last few songs on an album are usually not the best, but they got to go somewhere. I don't think it's a bad song.
Right.
It just doesn't have that punch you in the face hit quality.
It doesn't have the punch you in the face. I think the lyrics are sound. Like, okay. This is kind of the flip side of If Looks Could Kill to me. This is one where I feel like the lyrics are strong, but they didn't deliver on the music on this one. I feel like a different version of this could be a great song.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
According to Ron Nevison, again, he's like, this is what they were coming up with, which is why we had to bring in the outside writers.
Gotcha.
Again, it's not a bad song.
No.
Is it top five, top 10, number one?
No.
That's why.
But it's still, I still say little tweaking, you know.
Could have been something.
Mess with it like Whitesnake did on Here I Go Again, and you definitely could have a hit.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
By the way, Lynn Wilson is singing backup vocals on this song.
And Nancy's older sister.
Older sister.
Yeah.
Last song in the album?
Last song, Shell Shock.
Another rocker.
Big banger. Yeah.
It's a fine song. I like it.
Yeah. It's not a skipper.
No, it's not a skipper. There's no skippers.
I don't think this album has any skippers at all. There are songs that you might call filler, but they're still great songs.
With her voice, is there really any skippers, though?
That's true. I mean, I haven't listened to every one of their albums, but my goodness, just an incredible voice. And Nancy's guitar playing is fantastic as well.
It is. We can't discredit her. And, you know, we talked about this, fair or unfair, Nancy's look was perfect for MTV.
Yeah.
And Ann's voice were perfect for what these songs needed. It's a great 1-2 combination.
Absolutely.
I will say this, since this is the last song in the album, this was the first in a trifecta of three great rock, hair metal type of albums that they came up with in the late 80s.
Yep.
The next song is that they release is a song called Alone.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I listen to it, it blows my socks off.
Every time.
Every time.
Yeah, it's great.
That album was great. It had some great songs. Who Will You Run To? And There's the Girl. And then the next album they released in 1990, All I Want to Do Is Make Love to You. Beautiful song produced by Mutt Lange. I mean, they were a hit machine.
Yeah.
For those 5 years. And
even
I could
listen. Even if they made a deal with the devil to get it done.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mutt Lange being one of the minions.
The devil, yeah.
Okay, so one last tidbit.
Okay, I'm ready for it.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Nancy Wilson gave Eddie Van Halen his first acoustic guitar.
What?
So we've talked about, and one of our first, very first episodes was the Van Halen, Van Hagar dispute, right?
Yeah.
And Eddie started with an electric guitar. Yeah. He played electric guitar from the beginning, and so Nancy says she was the one who gave him his first acoustic guitar. Now, that is separate from another Van Halen story I read, and I don't know if it was the same day, but apparently as a in consideration, he offered to have a foursome with her and Ann and Alex.
Take it or leave it, babe. Oh, my gosh. How much blow was involved in that?
Yes. I don't think they took him up on his offer. How about you just go play that acoustic guitar, Eddie? Tell Valerie we said hi.
Oh, I can't top that.
Mic dropping it right now.
Man, okay, well that does it for Heart's 1985 album.
Guys, be sure and hit that follow button, hit that subscribe button, whatever you need to do so that you can come back for next week when we are going to cover Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms against this album. And these are two 1985 albums, both celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. Big at the same time, but very different.
Very
but
different.
I am excited to talk about the differences between the two of them. And can't beat some of those songs on the Dire Straits album.
Come back next week.
See you guys then.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.